You're now in the huddle with Coach Calls Timeout, the podcast that dissects the mind of a different basketball coach every episode. We uncover what makes them successful and how their story translates to your coaching journey. Let's unlock your team's potential together. Welcome to episode 21 of the Coach Calls Timeout podcast. Dan Jonker here. Let's get right into the show today. Our guest is Coach Josh Whitty from the Holland Hurricanes, currently the number one ranked college program in all of Canada. Josh was a guest of ours on episode number 3, where he joined in on a Canadian Coaches Roundtable we had back in March of last year. Coach Whitty is doing some fantastic things out in Prince Edward Island, and he shares some great insights for coaches of all levels. We're really excited to share his coaching journey with you. He has a lot on his plate right now as the coach of the number one team in the nation, and their school is also hosting the National Championship Tournament in March, so we're grateful that he joined us. My brother Brian handles the interview. Let's get to it. Oh, real quick, at the end of the episode, we have another installment of Story Time with Coach K, so stay tuned for a great story from a Canadian legend. This one is hilarious. Brian Jonker here with episode 22 of the Coach Calls Timeout podcast, and I've got Josh Whitty back with me today. He's the head coach at Holland College in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. Thanks for joining me here today, Josh.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Let's start in with the real meat and potatoes here. You've secured a berth in the national championship because you're hosting. Obviously, you're ranked number one in the country, so you have a very good squad as it is. So you certainly wouldn't be backing into anything, that's for sure. How are preparations going? Do you at all get involved in that? Do the staff at the school look after that? And you just worry about coaching? How does it work at your end?
Well, I try to get involved as much as I can, provide some opinion pieces and stuff. We've got an athletic department now that this will be our third year hosting a national championship. Last 2 years we hosted men's women's volleyball, so they're pretty well versed in it. And really I think that we've got just timing worked out last couple of years that we were able to attend those nationals, and it was a great show. I certainly expect that it'll be quite a showcase for CCA basketball here come March. The facility got a lot of work done to it over the last year. The floor was just resurfaced here over the Christmas break and repainted. It looks fantastic. And the gym had been painted here through the summer. So I think the facility looks fantastic. And I know, the athletic department crew with Albert and Nadine and Michael and Dan, all them, they're all well prepared and, like I said, sort of well experienced in hosting national championships now. So I'm sure it's going to be a remarkable week here. So really looking forward to it.
And I imagine East Coast hospitality will be in display for all that are coming in from around the country.
Yeah, we're sort of well known for that. So I certainly think that's sort of an expectation all the time. But I don't think we're going to be too hospitable when we step onto the court. Hopefully.
Yeah, I believe I said the exact same thing 3 years ago in an interview. We'll be nice to everybody until we play.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Unfortunately, that only worked out till the Final Four.
Yeah. We're hoping to get through that this year. It's been 2 years we've been in that same boat, so we're trying to break down the door on that one now. So.
Yeah, you've had a lot of success. I mean, this is your fourth season as a head coach. And you've already won 3 Atlantic Conference championships, won a bronze medal at the Nationals as well. But the last 2 years in the National semifinals, Humber seemed to nip you in a couple of really good games. So you've had a lot of success. And now hosting is, I would think, going to give you, it should give you a good advantage this time around. You got to think the same, I imagine.
Yeah, we do. I think we take pride, and it's one of the things we've taken a lot of pride in over the last few years, is being really tough to play at home. We have fairly good, student support on campus, and I think that generally just the comfort level of playing at home always helps out. But we actually haven't lost at home in over 3 years, so we're hoping we can keep that going through a fourth, and that'll certainly get us the result that we want at the end of the season. So.
Now, your enrollment is small, right? It's a small school.
Correct. Yeah, our enrollment, I guess this year it's maybe about 3,000 students, 2,500 to 3,000.
The kids do come out to the games. They enjoy coming out?
Yeah, I mean, with the way that it's built, the residence is really right across the foyer, so the residence is full. So generally, we get pretty good crowds, and, you know, I think that it's small town sort of thing, so we get a lot of support from the local basketball community here, and I know there's, you know, I can barely go anywhere these days without somebody asking me, you know, the dates to nationals and all that sort of stuff, so it's great. I mean, we have a good basketball support community here. There's an NBL professional team in town. UPI Panthers have a very strong basketball program, very strong basketball history, and then we're sort of the new kids on the block in a lot of ways, and then we've only really had varsity athletics at Holland College here. I guess this is 11 years. But certainly I think both our men's and women's programs have been very strong as of recent, and that helps sort of draw the local interest. So I expect big crowds and great environments, not just for our games, but for all games, really.
And did you, or do you, or are you preparing any differently throughout the season, knowing that you are already going to be there?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't know for sure that we are preparing any differently. The last few seasons we've had pretty strong teams, and we sort of over prepared anyway. Like, we watched a lot of game film on other teams we thought might be at nationals. Knowing that you're going to be there this year is a little bit different, and I think that we've taken an approach, not unlike other years, that we're just trying to go out and be better every week than we were the week before. And I think that so long as we do that continually through the season, we'll be ready to go. But you know, it's one of those things that I certainly question that coming into the season. Are we going to approach it any different? Are we going to set different timetables or do anything different? But I think that in a lot of ways, it's a similar sort of mindset as in years past. We've had the same goal, just now that we know we're playing, I guess it's what, in 8 weeks here, 9 weeks for a national championship. So, you know, we're spending a lot of time preparing for some teams we think could be there. We're spending a lot of time working on our own individual film stuff and breaking down what we're doing. And you know, we added a couple pieces to Christmas, so we're still trying to integrate those guys into what we're doing. So I think that we'll certainly go about it in a similar fashion and try to be better every week and go out and play games. All our games are on Saturdays and Sundays, typically through our league play. So try to get two wins in the weekend and find a way to measure if we've been more successful, you know, each weekend than the weekend before. So
we've, you and I, we spent a little bit of time together the last three nationals, I guess. And we've talked about different things. One of which, I mean, the East Coast, there's never been a national championship from the East Coast from your conference, correct?
I'm well aware we're trying to change that.
Yeah, I rib you, and we have a little bit of fun with it when we're on our own here, and that's not my intention in these questions, but nor is my intention to mount the pressure on you, but just for the people out there to understand really what type of situation you guys are in. No one from the East Coast has ever won. You've been in good positions, like you said, with really strong teams the last few years, but I think I can compare it to what we have in Ontario here with our conference. We have two divisions. We have an Eastern and a Western division, and the Western division's won 13 straight Ontario championships and 19 of the last 20. And the East, typically throughout the year, they'll have strong, you know, it appears some stronger teams, and they go along and they look good and they've got pieces, but because the conference as a whole isn't necessarily as strong as what we go through in the West on a day-to-day basis, they don't get the competition necessary to prepare them for when they have to win at the end of the year. And I think we've talked about it, and traditionally the East Coast, you've had some good teams, but your conference from top to bottom isn't strong enough to push everybody and give you those games. I think you've played a little bit of a different preseason this year. Is that something that you took into consideration, knowing you needed maybe some stronger games, realizing you were going to eventually be at nationals?
Yeah, we certainly had a fantastic preseason from a competition standpoint this year. In some aspects, I think we lucked into it a little bit because you know, there was a couple teams drop out of some tournaments that we ended up getting into. But we always try to book a pretty tough preseason, and fortunately we've got some pretty good relationships with the CIS or U Sports programs here in Canada. So we've been fortunate to be able to get some games. This year, one thing we did differently was last year we didn't play at Christmas time. This year we went over to Fredericton and played UMP twice. That was a great test for us to be in tight games the whole way where we needed to make, you know, our decisions down the stretch in the whole bit. So that was something we did differently than last year. You know, and we won't have any of those sort of U Sports or CIS teams on our schedule anymore. So I think that, you know, half of our league's pretty strong, and certainly, you know, I think this of our 21 league games, you've got to really show up and be well cut out to play a good solid game for at least 10 of them, right? And the other 10 or 11, you need to really go out and perform your best, regardless of, you know, where the score is or what the level of competition is, kind of thing. So
now let's shift gears a little bit and go back to the start. We briefly touched on it in our roundtable, but how did you get into coaching to begin with?
I guess I just sort of fell into it a little bit. I played from the time I was pretty young. It's funny, we were talking over the Christmas break here with some family and stuff. We were saying, me and my brother, when we were in elementary school, we were hosting basketball camps in the driveway, charging kids a $2 bill, you know, brown $2 bills to participate. So I think that from a fairly young age, and of course my brother coaches here at the local high school. So I think from a fairly young age, I knew I had an interest in coaching, and I always sort of liked the X's and O's part of it, and played for some pretty good coaches growing up. So, you know, I think after my playing days were over, I sort of got right into coaching and started at, you know, junior high and high school levels and worked my way up and, you know, jumped on as an assistant here for 5 years. And then whenever George Morrison moved on, I took over for him. So it was something I've done a lot of. I spend a lot of time at it with basketball camps or clinics or what have you, or even if just going to games. Like this weekend, we had a big high school tournament here in Charlottetown, and I was asked, I'll pop it other more games over the weekend. So I think if, you know, you're a bit of a gym rat or basketball junkie type thing, you just sort of find a way to be involved.
And you talked about George Morrison. There's only been two coaches in the brief history of Holland College. You're the second, obviously, and George was the first. He's a legendary basketball figure on the East Coast, and his son is Scott, who's the head coach of the Maine Red Claws of the NBA Development League for the Celtics. What type of stuff did you learn from George in the 5 years you were his assistant?
Oh, all kinds. I actually played for George for a year here at Holland College before I started coaching with him. And we coached here at the college and some provincial team stuff and lots of camps and stuff over the years. Still stay in fairly regular contacts. And yeah, you certainly, the Morrison's sort of like a basketball royalty name around here, right? I've actually had his nephew play for me last year. And his other nephew is now one of our assistant coaches here this year. So, no, they're big basketball family. I learned lots from George over the years, running practices and drills and different scenarios, game type scenarios and stuff. So, and if nothing else, it's always good to get together with him and talk about some different basketball stories over the years or experiences, kind of thing. So, he's definitely been a great mentor for me along the way, and always appreciate any of the, you know, the knowledge that he's been willing to share and pass on over the years. It's been great.
And what do you think his best quality was as a coach?
I think that he always did a great job of demanding things of players, expecting them to be performing at a certain level. You know, even in practices, he would tighten things up pretty quick if they were going off the rails a bit. So he ran great practices, you know, very organized. I think that he delivered clear messages type things. So those were some of the things that I always enjoyed coaching with George with. It's that, you know, things always were handled a certain way and guys were kept on task that way. So trying to carry that into our coaching style now too.
So he'd be a mentor of yours. Do you have any others?
Well, he's one that I certainly got to coach with. I think that there's some guys that I coach with now that I want to consider the mentors or co-coaches or whichever. You know, that I still learn things from, and certainly I still think, despite what my hair shows, that I'm a fairly young coach in the game. So I by no means think that I'm, you know, a know-it-all or anything like that. So I always think that there's other ways to approach things, and I'll certainly bounce questions off other guys. And Jason McDonald is the guy who coached me in high school. He still coaches high school. He's coaching high school girls here now. And he was a fine player in his day. Coached me all through high school. I thought he really knew the game well. I learned a lot from him. He was a very good player at UPI in his time, in his day. And then, you know, some other guys that I've coached with, that I've played with and stuff along the way, they certainly, you know, provided me with some different outlooks on things. And I think that's sort of the thing about coaching, right? You get lots of different experiences and witness what some guys do and take what you like and sort of disregard what you don't like. And you sort of make up your own sort of coaching portfolio or coaching, you know, niche, so to speak. So I think that over the years, I've spent lots of time, whether it be reading or watching or taking in what coaches are doing and sort of taking what I like and applying that to my own coaching style.
And if you had to describe yourself, what is your coaching style?
Well, I think I like to consider myself a player's coach. I think that we, you know, try to support our guys and push our guys, try to develop good relationships with them. I think you need to have the strong relationships first, right, before you can really coach them up, so to speak. You know, I think from an offensive standpoint and all that, we play pretty fast. We have played pretty fast, but I always try to make sure we're playing a style that suits our personnel too. I mean, I don't think you can't make a round peg fit into a square hole, so to speak. So you gotta find something that suits your players' capabilities and run with that sort of thing. So I'm always open to new ways of doing things, and I think that that's sort of our best fit right now, because from year to year things can change so quickly for us. That's personnel can change, and you've got to play a different style and adapt. So I'd like to think that I'm pretty adaptable.
Yeah, and that's a quality that a lot of coaches we've had on the podcast talk about, is adaptability. I mean, if you, like you said, you can't fit the round pegs into the square holes. If you don't change with the personnel that you have, unless you're fortunate enough to recruit exactly the personnel to fit your preferred style of play, you'll struggle. I mean, you've got to find a way. For us in particular, if I'm telling my own story here, I mean, you're aware, we've texted each other over the weekend, but I've had the unfortunate news at Christmas here where I've lost a number of my first year kids due to academics, and and with that and with injury, we were down to 7 people on the weekend, and I wouldn't consider any of them big. So we've even within the course of the season we're in, we've had to change and adapt the style that we're playing. So if you're not adaptable, you probably won't survive it at a higher level for sure.
Yeah, and I think the other thing with this, especially in the CCAA, is oftentimes your team can look a lot different from one year to the next. You know, I mean, there's some CIS programs where you can have kids for 4 or 5 years, but I've got all my programs at Holland College here are 1 and 2 year programs. So we've got 5 guys from last year. We had 3 guys return the year before that. So you're always sort of picking up the pieces with a new bunch. And, you know, just the things that we did last year just aren't going to necessarily work the same way with this year. So you have to be adaptable and be able to approach things a different way.
And what do you think would be, if you had to say one quality of a head coach, what do you think the strongest qualities would be for a head coach to have?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of them. Sort of narrow down to one is physical, but I think you'd want to, right off the get-go, you have to be doing it for the right reasons. You have to care about the kids that you're coaching. You can't just be about the basketball stuff, right? Especially at the college level. If you don't care about the kids the right way or care about what they're doing in the classroom, I think that, you know, right off the bat, you're probably chasing your tail a little bit. Because, you know, they can see through that too, right? You know, so I think, you know, you have to have the caring part down. The organization certainly plays a big part, especially if you're trying to play at a high level. You need to be organized. You need to have your stuff together and be able to run good practices and the whole bit. So, you know, I think there's certainly lots of qualities that a head coach needs. You know, but I think it sort of starts with those two things, being organized and really putting your players first.
And how old is your son now?
I know he'll be 7 here on January 18th.
So is he playing out there now?
Yeah, he's into his 3rd winter of playing here now. So we've got a minor program here where I live, Stratford, just outside of Charlottetown, that he's been involved in for his 3rd winter. So it's pretty fun. He was out yesterday. It's great to watch.
Are you coaching that as well, or you just watch?
I'm actually not coaching that. A good friend of mine who actually coached me when I was a kid, and he actually has a son that's a year younger than mine now. So he's coaching that group up, and it's sort of really nice for me to get to be on the sidelines and just encourage him and tell him how much I enjoy watching him play and leave it at that, because it's certainly a lot of fun. You know, it's always a great reminder when you go out to those things or take in mini games or anything, and just the fact that the game's so much fun and the kids are just sort of naturally drawn to it, right? So it's always a nice sort of break, especially when you can be into doing scout film or something the night before, and then you go out on a Saturday morning and just watch kids enjoy playing the game. It's a lot of fun.
So when you see coaches at that level, at a recreational house league, maybe a rep, and you are still out recruiting and see the high schools as well, what do you think some of the younger age group coaches are doing well these days, and where do you think maybe they could improve?
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, you'll hear from lots of people, but the emphasis on the fundamentals is certainly a place that I think we need to continually harp on or continue to improve. I think that can be easy for, you know, middle school or high school teams to get wrapped up in X's and O's parts of the game. You know, and maybe what I've seen an awful lot of in recent years in high school level years is everybody's playing zone defense. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with playing zone defense. I mean, we play some of it too, but I don't know that there being a particular, a lot of time being spent teaching the fundamentals of man-to-man defense either. So I think that the fundamentals is certainly something that we need to continually harp on. And I think you hear that at all different levels, right? So the same point is we still spend a lot of time on fundamentals in our practices, right? So, things that they're doing well. I think that, you know, especially around here, I noticed that there's always seems to be, a lot of interest, you know, and there's all kinds of people that are interested in coaching, people that are interested in giving back, and they work pretty hard at it. You know, I think this weekend was a great example of that here in Charlottetown with the Confederation City Classic, the big high school tournament here, and, just talking with coaches and being around the gym, like the enthusiasm was really high. The games were competitive. You know, that there was lots of interest in it. And from the coaching standpoint, it certainly seemed like there was lots of good people in those positions. So, you know, that's great to see. And you want to see people leaving the gym having a lot of fun playing the game, because it's a great game. It can open a lot of doors for people down the road.
Now, you mentioned briefly there about zones and stuff, and I've read things online and seen things on Twitter, because I've coached my daughter's team the last 4 years in their grades, 5, 6, 7, 8, and it's exactly what you said. There is a lot of people who, as soon as they're allowed to, will start playing zone. I play a lot of zone, or I have. This small group I have now, we won't be, but I have played a lot of it. I'm not opposed to it, but what I am opposed to is that I find at those ages, I think a lot of people play it because the coaches, it's almost easier than teaching the man-to-man, or it appears like it's easier. Hey, you know, you stand in this area and you just look after anything that comes around your area.
I totally agree with that, Brian. I think that's what my point was, in that they're not teaching like man-to-man fundamentals anymore. And that you can tell kids, you know, you be in this spot, you be in that spot. And I think that's what's going on. I mean, I play zone too, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with playing zone. I know that for years when I was doing potential stuff, there's always things being batted around about banning zone at certain age levels and the whole bit. But it's part of the game, and like I said, we play lots of it too. But I think that you're certainly capable of playing much better zone if you have to understand how to play defense fundamentally well.
Absolutely.
In general, right? And yeah. I don't think that's what's happening. I don't think that the coaching is happening at that level. So yeah. I'd like to see more teams, you know, developing those sorts of defensive fundamentals first. And then, you know, I think they'd be better defensively in zone or man or whatever they want to play. But
yeah,
once we understand those sorts of aspects, I think we're all better off.
Yeah, we didn't, grade 5, 6, and 7, we didn't play any zone whatsoever, and we just taught man-to-man fundamentals. In grade 8, we started to play a little bit of zone and finished playing a lot of zone, but it was all with man principles in mind. Stopping the ball, held positions, still communicating sight, ball, all those types of things. So we took it very seriously, and we certainly didn't want to just use it as a way out or a way to hide poor defenders or, you know, any of those types of things that I think some of the people use it for. So
yeah, I think one of the things that comes to mind here talking about this sort of stuff is, Yeah, I think you're right. I think the coaches sort of use it as a crutch and they just sort of lean on it as, you know, and we were practicing after a middle school team here. This is a few years ago and I was watching the tail end of a practice and at the very end of a practice, the coach was calling out plays and we're talking like a grade 7-8 team here in the city. And, he's calling out plays, Kansas, run Duke, run 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whichever. And kids are going up and down around these plays 5-on-0. And he's got kids that can't dribble with their left hand, they can't do proper layup footwork, and here they are trying to run very complex sort of plays that, you know, somebody probably watched a college team run and thought that would look good, but we're missing the fundamental part of the game, you know, and, I think that it can be easy to get caught up in X's and O's and all that sort of stuff, and it's fun stuff to get caught up in, but I think we gotta, especially at the lower levels and, you know, the middle school levels and the high school levels, do a really good job of coaching kids, teaching kids how to play first.
I agree completely. So we've, you know, I'm excited for you guys hosting. I think this is going to be, I think it's a great opportunity for you guys. I know when we won our national championship, it was out east and we had a fantastic time out there and really enjoyed the hospitality. I think it probably will be at a whole other level out in PEI. And if we're somehow miraculously able to get there and experience it, we'd very much be looking forward to it. So we're going to wish you all the best there. The other thing, not to add any more pressure to you, but so the last 13 years in the CCAA, there's been 13 different national champions. If you're looking at probably the two best programs that weren't in those 13, they're currently ranked number 1 and 2 in the country right now, and that's you and Sheridan. So if we're not going to have a repeat winner somewhere in here, then I would say that the two of you have the bullseye on your back. And
Well, they're very good. Gotten to watch them a few times and familiar with the Sheridan program. We've seen them at Nationals a couple of years ago. They were at Nationals a couple of years. We were there. We've been there to Nationals 4 straight years now, and I think that they were there in our first 2. And I know that some of their players are back there, and obviously Coach Flack's one of the all-timers here in the CCAA, so I've got a lot of respect for their program. And certainly hope to see them here and certainly hope to see you guys here. And look forward to hosting everybody in our gym.
No, wait a second. Wait a second. You can't hope that us and Sheridan are both here and then not get your revenge on Humber, who's beaten you the last 2 years.
Yeah, we're happy to have any of you down here, really. So we already know we're playing. We're just ready for you guys to figure out who's coming. So.
Come on, there's not a little piece of you that would like Humber again in your gym?
Yeah, we'd love to play Humber again. I'd play them anytime. So they've got a great program, and I know that coaching situations changed there a little bit, but I know it's the coach that was on the staff last couple of years too. So
yeah, they're very good,
and we watch them all the time too. You know, we pay a lot of attention across the country of teams that we think are, you know, probably coming this way or have a good shot of coming this way. So we break down a lot of film on those teams, and certainly I think that this group, the level of play at this Nationals, I expect to be very, very high. I think that there's some really strong teams in Alberta. I think the Pac West is pretty tight. It's going to be hard to even pick who's going to come out of there, I think, most nights. But, you know, and obviously Ontario is always so strong. So, but, you know, Sheridan, Humber, yourselves, they're all welcome to come on down. I know there's only 2 spots, but we'd be happy to play anyone else.
All right, well, we end every podcast with a full court press where we throw some short answer type questions at you. So I'm going to see if you can navigate these 5 or 6 questions I got for you. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Offense or defense?
I'm an offensive guy.
Favorite NBA team?
Boston Celtics.
Favorite team to watch?
In the NBA or in college?
Either.
Virginia. Really like Virginia this year.
Favorite gym or arena that you've coached in?
Cape Breton hosts the fall classic there. We've been to it 3 times over at Center 200 in Sydney, Cape Breton. It's always a great tournament, great atmosphere there. So certainly like coaching in that atmosphere for sure. It was good.
What's your favorite away from the gym activity?
Spending time with my son. Obviously, he comes to the gym with me all the time too, so I've got a 6-year-old, he's 7 soon, little boy who's pretty active and pretty involved in just about everything.
Favorite sport other than basketball?
I grew up playing baseball. I watch a lot more football nowadays, but I spend an inordinate amount of time watching basketball. So, you know, I guess if it had to be one, it'd probably be football these days. But those are certainly, baseball is certainly like sort of my first love growing up. So.
All right. And finally, give us something that's on your musical playlist that might surprise people.
I listen to a lot of a group called Lord Huron a lot lately. They're a pretty good group.
All right.
Don't know if anybody even knows who they are.
We'll have to look them up.
Sure.
All right, man. Well, we really appreciate you taking some time to join me here tonight. And again, I wish you all the best. And if we're not winning a national championship this year, it would put a smile on my face if you guys got one.
Well, for a guy that's been telling me for years that depth is overrated, now's the time for you to put to the test.
That's right. All right, man. Well, we'll keep in touch, eh?
Yeah, thanks for sure, Brian. That was good.
There you have it. It's pretty easy to understand why Coach Woody's so successful in his short time at Holland College. He has a calm and controlled vibe that keeps his players under control and able to thrive under pressure. In that conversation we just heard, he touched on three aspects of our basketball coaching roadmap: building relationships with your players, being organized, and the importance of adaptability. They're all critical facets of coaching. I'll provide a link to our basketball coaching roadmap, the seven areas where successful coaches shine, in the show notes at coachcallstimeout.com/22. If you enjoyed what you heard, we'd appreciate if you could rate us on iTunes or share this episode with a friend or coach. Here at Coach Calls Timeout, we're a basketball coaching resource built to help coaches improve their personal and technical skills. This podcast is designed to help your personal skills. You can learn from other coaches' experiences about building relationships and what it takes to be a successful coach. When I say successful, I'm not talking about wins and losses. I'm talking about creating great memories for kids so they keep coming back to learn more day after day and year after year. We also help with the technical aspect of the game, the X's and O's, drills, running an efficient and effective practice. Our members have access to our video playbook with plays for all ages and skill levels. We also have video drills to help with skill development. Everything we do is in video format, and there's a reason for that. Other than it's a preferred method of learning for kids, our videos show something that still shots can't: timing. Our video playbook shows the critical timing required to run a successful play, and the video drills give a visual description of how each drill works. All the videos are small enough files that you can send them to your players to use as study guides, or you can bring them with you to practices and games. Just download them directly to your phone or tablet. There is no other coaching resource like this. And best of all, we have a special offer for our podcast listeners. Go to coachcallstimeout.com and use the coupon code PODCAST when you're signing up, and you'll receive a free 7-day trial to sample everything we have to offer. Just promise me one thing if you use this. Give us some feedback while you're in there. We're always looking to help coaches, and your feedback is vital to us. Before we get to story time with the Canadian Coach K, I have a quick question that's very topical for this time of the year. We had a question about fundraising and if we knew any good fundraisers that we could share. Brian just posted an article to our website with a great fundraiser that takes place during the Super Bowl. It's called Super Bowl Squares. It's a little difficult to explain using audio, especially since I'm a visual learner, hence the video plays and drills that we have. So I'm going to provide a link in the show notes at coachcallstimeout.com/22. This fundraiser is quick, easy to set up, and doesn't involve door-to-door sales or desperate pleas for money. And you can easily raise $1,000 without much effort. So check it out, it's worth your time. We'll be back again in 2 weeks to pick the brain of another great coach. But before we go, if you listened to episode 20 with Coach Steve Konchalski, you know that he's a Hall of Fame basketball coach who's been coaching for over 40 years. In that episode, he shares some great stories. He has so many stories that we've made a new segment. And here's the second installment of Storytime with Coach K. Enjoy.
This would be the fall of 1976. It was my second year at St. Evex, but my first full recruiting year. And I brought in a whole bunch of freshmen. We scheduled some games, you know, me and Buck being from the United States, and also having two or three players in that recruiting class from New York City, where my roots are, and my brother runs the scouting service. Anyway, he certainly helped me with those kids. So I booked some games. We booked Iona with, in fact, Jimmy Valvano was coaching at Iona at the time, Jimmy V. And we booked, I think it was Hofstra and St. Peter's. But about a week before we were supposed to go on this trip, I get a call from Duke University. And it was Coach Bill Foster. And he said, hey, Argentina bailed out on us. We're looking for a game. We know you come down to New York. Can you, I said, oh, my goodness. That means four games in four nights with seven freshmen, several of whom are from small towns in Nova Scotia. Anyway, bottom line is, why pass up a chance to play Duke? And this was the first of three times over my career that the St. X has gone down and played Duke in Cameron Indoor Stadium, an amazing experience. Any year you do that. Anyway, so we go down there. They pay for the whole shot. And we're playing Duke, and they had an Olympian, Tate Armstrong from the 76 Olympics, All-American. And, of course, we were taking our lumps, as we expected, with all these freshman players. And I looked down at the end of the bench, and because by that time the game was getting out of hand, and I figured, okay, I'm going to put some of these young Nova Scotia kids in the game. I looked down at the end of the bench, and there's a six-spot freshman from a little town in Nova Scotia. And he's got a camera in his hand, and he's taking pictures. I think mostly he's cheerleaders, but he's taking pictures of Cameron. He's taking pictures of the game. And not only is he taking pictures, he's down on his knee, on one knee to get a better angle. So I go down to the end of the bench. I grab the camera out of his hand, and I obviously wasn't very happy with this, with the way he was approaching this game. We're trying to play basketball, and he's taking pictures. And, of course, the camera's crazy. They go crazy. Give him back the camera. I start chanting, give him back the camera and whatnot. Anyway, I think he learned his lesson, and it was an embarrassing situation for, I think, all of us. I eventually put him in the game. But, again, it was an innocent move on his part. The next thing we do, we fly to New York the next day. And we stay right downtown in Times Square. I'm going to give these kids the ultimate New York City experience. And I tell them, look, stay together. There's a lot of crime around here. There's drugs, there's whatever. But stay together, in groups of four or five, and nobody's going to bother you and whatnot. We're going to leave for the game at 6:30. So anyway, 6:30, we're assembling for the game. And who's not there? It's the same kid. With the camera, right? And I said, what happened to you guys? Did you get lost or whatever? He just went off on his own. Anyway, so I write a note, and we had to get to the game. I mean, I'm scared to death where this kid is, being such wet, so wet behind the ears. But nonetheless, we had to get to the game. So I'm writing a note telling him, when you get back here, stay in your room, lock yourself in a room, and we'll meet you when we get back. We walk out of the hotel, and there he is walking down the street by himself, looking up at the skyscrapers. But fortunately, we found him, and he was fine. And that same team, 2 years later, went to the national semifinals in Calgary at the at that time CIS National. So those experiences all added up to to putting a team together that could compete at a national level. But those are some of the growing pains that we went through.